Welcome to the Development Policy Centre podcast. I'm Ashley Betteridge. Paul Brockman has been working for Medicine Sans Frontières, or Doctors Without Borders, for nearly a decade, most recently as the head of mission in Papua New Guinea. I caught up with him recently when he was visiting Canberra to discuss the family and sexual violence epidemic in PNG and MSF's work on this issue. I'm chatting with Paul Brockman today from Medicine Sans Frontières, and you're the outgoing head of mission in PNG, that's right?
Yeah, that's correct. I've been managing the activities up in Papua New Guinea for the last 2 years, and I am literally on my way out, having left 2 days ago.
Right. Okay. So how long have you been working in this role?
I've been working with Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders, since early 2005. So it's pretty much 9 years now. The Papua New Guinea mission was the first time I was head of mission. Prior to that, I was project manager most recently at one of our larger projects in Congo. Okay. So if you think in terms of a place where there are patients being treated, sort of a hospital or a clinic or a couple of hospitals and clinics in one location, that's a project. Right. And a mission is several of those put together.
Okay. So how have you found working in Papua New Guinea over the past few years?
Well, that's a very broad question. PNG is compared to the other places where I've worked, and this is, I think, about the seventh or eighth mission for me with MSF, ranging from, you know, China and Sri Lanka to Congo and Nigeria. I would say in many ways PNG is sort of the most unusual and unique in the sense that it really is an incredibly diverse and complex place. And this is said as someone who, as I said, has worked in Nigeria, in Congo, in the hill tribal country of eastern India. I've worked in relatively complicated social and political and medical contexts. Something about PNG, the length of human history there, the diversity of human habitation there, makes it unusually fascinating to work in. You know, I mean, I'm a wannabe anthropologist if I had a few more careers to go. And the work that we're doing there is specifically with family and sexual violence. And so you're really sitting in the heart of where the community lives and in the middle of the family and trying to get into the dynamic of why violence becomes such a common resort when there's conflict or when there's tension. And people see it as a social problem, but of course, as a medical humanitarian organization, what we're working on is providing the medical care people need immediately after an incident, making sure that the repercussions medically down the road are managed and limited and hopefully avoided completely. And so that places you in a really interesting intersection of complex medical work and complex social environment.
Mm. So it sounds like it's been fascinating and challenging work.
it's been, you know, very up and very down, and at times very depressing, and at times very motivating. And there's a lot of really amazing, remarkable people doing amazing, remarkable work there. And there's a lot of women and children that come out smiling despite pretty difficult circumstances.
Hmm. So how does the family and sexual violence situation in PNG compare with other countries where you've worked on this issue or seen this issue?
So the first time that I personally worked with sexual violence more specifically was in Nigeria in 2007-08. I was down in the Niger Delta, and we started doing a lot more community outreach to educate people about the importance of medical care immediately after an incident of rape. And we did see an awful lot of underage, primarily underage girls, you know, and then women, and then some underage boys. And it was pretty shocking. And then I've also touched that work in obviously in Congo and also in India when I worked there. I'd say PNG is more prevalent. There's more of the women and children of PNG face violence and or sexual violence in their lives. I think, you know, this is anecdotal because there's not good data on this, but I think more of them face it on a regular basis in their lives than anywhere else that I've ever been.
Mm. Yeah, so how is MSF working to address this issue? You mentioned providing medical care. That's through the family support centers, is that right?
Yeah, so what happened is about a decade ago, before MSF started working in PNG, the Family Sexual Violence Action Committee, the national sort of coordinating body, had created this concept of a family support center, which would be, the common term is sort of a one-stop shop. And of course, what that means is different to everyone. As a medical organization, we're aware that if someone has been raped, there is an immediate risk of infection with HIV. There's an immediate risk of infection with other sexually transmitted infections. If it's a girl or a woman of childbearing age, there's a risk of an unwanted pregnancy. There's also significant psychological risks. And then, of course, there can just simply be wounds and cuts, even broken bones. These can become infected and so on. But the most time-sensitive issue is the question of pregnancy or HIV infection. Because, of course, if you get pregnant and you're a 15-year-old girl, you're going to face some very tough questions down the road, because this is not a context in which women have the ability to freely choose abortion. And, you know, if you have been raped by someone who is HIV positive, then you have a limited time window, 72 hours, in which to take post-exposure prophylaxis and really reduce your risk from significant to virtually nothing. So what we found is that awareness of the medical emergency nature of rape is extremely limited. And people, if they do anything, the most common reaction, I think, is sort of try to move on with your life, try to ignore it, possibly tell no one, possibly tell only your closest family or friends. Especially if you're a 13-year-old girl, what are you going to do? You know, who are you going to tell? I mean, you're really afraid of what the ramifications of this will be. Problem is, if you don't go get medical care, then 3 months later, there may be very significant ramifications, and it's too late to deal with them then in a preventive way. You can only cope with what the situation is now. So we've really stepped in and tried to make sure that people are aware and have access to medical care. That's for us, the first most essential thing. Then there's a lot of follow-up steps. There's access to protective services, there's access to legal services, and those are equally important, but maybe they're not quite as emergent, although protection is quite emergent as well. But you really only have 72 hours in which to get post-exposure prophylaxis. You have 5 days or less to get emergency contraception, and once that window's passed, that window's passed.
Mm. So the family support centers in PNG, how many of them are there now?
Well, that's a really good question. So it depends on who you talk to. Now, you know, if a place calls itself a family support center, but you're someone who's been raped recently, and you go and you can't receive what we call the five essential services. What we've done is we've put together this minimum package, you know, the essential things that we know you need, which is psychological first aid, medical first aid, emergency contraception to avoid an unwanted pregnancy, post-exposure prophylaxis to prevent HIV AIDS or AIDS, and STIs. You know, you can do an STI prophylaxis to prevent, you know, syphilis or other things, and then vaccinations to prevent tetanus or hepatitis B. Those are the five things. And if you don't get those five things, then there really may be complications. You know, we can underestimate the impact psychologically of rape or intimate partner violence. But just even a basic psychological first aid, which is not, you know, we're not talking classic psychotherapy. We're talking basic stabilization, psychological stabilization, getting people to think about, where am I going to go home? How am I going to get safely home? How am I going to restore my daily life? If you don't do that, people can sort of start to spin off into depression. And we've had patients over the years who've said, I can't even really cook dinner for my kids. I don't want to take care of myself. People have ideas of suicide. People have a lot of complex reactions to instances like this. So coming back to the question of how many family support centers there are, I know that the support center in Lae, which MSF supported for 5.5 years until last year in June, I know that the family support center in Taree, I know that the one in Port Moresby where we started working in January, I know that the one in Maprik in East Sepik where we started working last year in November, I'm told that the one in Kundiawa, which we've never worked with, but has developed some really good response of their own from their reports, I hear, Mount Hagen, which we did some training for over the years and which is supported by another NGO now, I think also Vanimo. So I think there may be about 7 that are actually providing a full package of medical care. Then there's probably a good handful of others that say they're a family support center. What that means for them is questionable, though, and frankly, to me, if you can't go and receive at least the minimum 5 essential services and then referrals for other services, I question the value of that. Honestly, I question the value of what that provides in terms of service for the patients.
Mm. So what kind of things are you seeing coming into the family support centres that MSF's been working with? Like what type of violence is most prevalent?
Well, over the years, we got 6 years, 6.5 years worth of data from all the different places that we've worked now. Roughly, typically, 80% are intimate partner violence. This is to say, primarily women, but some men, that are sort of trapped in cycles of violence with boyfriends, girlfriends, spouses, and or children that are physically abused within the family. About 20% are survivors of rape or other sexual violence. The cases that usually go most to our hearts are generally the fairly significant cohort of underage girls and boys that have been raped, usually by people they know, people from within the community, sometimes uncles, aunts, sometimes parents, relatives. Mm-hmm. And also the women that are trapped in these cycles of violence with abusive spouses. And you know, there are some pretty shocking stories, and you it's hard to not get a little numb over time when you've seen so many 10-year-old, 12-year-old, 14-year-old girls and boys come in after just the most horrifying, even younger, the most horrifying instances. And as the head of mission, I'm a non-clinical staff member. I'm actually not clinical or medical myself at all. I'm a general manager. But you end up working with doctors and nurses and people in the medical coordination that have just come back from seeing, you know, a 5-year-old girl that was raped. And you just think to yourself, what are we doing to the next generation?
What do you think is driving these high levels of violence in PNG? Do you have any insight on that from your work? I know it's a difficult question.
Well, you know, that's a really common question. I think it's a very, very well-intentioned question, and it's one that I think absolutely merits study. But if I can say, I think focusing on where it comes from to the exclusion of providing service now is detrimental for the patients. And so as a humanitarian medical group, what we try to do is make sure that we focus on the patients now. That said, and we really are calling on everyone to focus on the patients now, because the truth is, doing another baseline study, doing another study of where this comes from, it may help us feel better, it may help us understand that which seems incomprehensible, but it's really, I don't think it's going to intervene in the cycle of violence. I don't think it's going to help the patients now. It may help us feel that we understand, but I'm not sure that this is understandable. However, I have done some thinking about this, and you know, I think it's social breakdown. I think it's a breakdown of the protective mechanisms that worked for thousands or tens of thousands of years, not to create a modern society, but maybe to create a society in which women and children have some protections through a complex, robust social network. You know, I mean, was it a culture in which you or I, as you know, citizens of a modern, developed, you know, post-capitalist industrial democracy would want to work? Probably not. But was it a society in which people were brutalized in their homes every day? Also, I think not. Mm-hmm. I think that's change in the post-colonial era. The mechanisms that bound men and women and children in complex social mechanisms, those have deteriorated and not been replaced by the kinds of robust legal protections that we have in Australia or Europe or the US.
Mm. So, speaking about those kind of services and protection, what options do patients at the family support centres have to pursue through legal channels or through other channels any sort of justice or access to wider services? Is that a gap at the moment?
It's a pretty substantial gap. It's definitely a pretty substantial gap. It's one that I would say is attracting a bit more attention with time. And it's one of those situations where you have, like, baby steps and the indications of the beginning of service provision. I think, you know, if you sit there and you look at the numbers of patients, individuals, persons attacked, children, women, men attacked or raped, and the number of cases that actually go to court, it would depress you. But if you look maybe statistically versus at what was done 5 years ago versus what's happening now, maybe you'll see a little bit of hope. And you really do need to try to look at hope and focus. I think one of the things in the PNG context is there's so much complexity. There's so much going on that we really need to say, where are we going to try to have an impact? Pick that area and stick with it. And that's what we've done with the medical service provision. We've said, look, we're going to try to make sure that patients can receive access to emergency medical care that will at least stabilize them and protect them from further harm. That's really all we're going to look at, because if we start to look broader, then it gets complicated. You know, at the same time, we do know that our patients need access to protective services, and there are. In lay, for example, there's a couple of child protective services officers. In lay, there are some people working with the Office of Public Prosecutor that try to bring cases. Is it enough? Certainly not. Is it more than existed a decade ago? Absolutely. So you got to take that and you got to reinforce it. Now, what's really exciting to us as MSF right now is this this new model to create a more robust management of those onward reference of services. They're calling it the case management center, but they're thinking about other things like, I think I've heard PNG family support services right now. And whatever you call it, it's what patients need, which is get the medical care, get your referrals, make the choice. This is the thing. A lot of people look at how do you get protection? How do you take someone to court? You know, first you got to get people protected from further medical care. I mean, it's really not going to do you a lot of good if you can sue your attacker, but you've got HIV, you know? So get your medical services, and then you make the choice. Are you going to take the case to court? Are you going to seek protection against the spouse that was abusing? Are you going to try to work it out within the family? That's got to be an individual person's choice.
Mm. Yeah, we've been doing some work alongside the case management center in PNG, so we're hoping that's something that can try and bring those services together a bit more for people. But it sounds like progress has been made. That sounds promising. How do you think the government and agencies in PNG are working on this issue?
Well, I definitely sense. We had a big conference, like a multi-partner, multi-sector conference in November that MSF co-sponsored with the Family Sexual Violence Action Center and with the National Department of Health that looked at what are the services that a survivor needs in the immediate aftermath of an incident. And that's, you know, the five essential services, emergency medical care. That's some immediate protection from further harm. And then it also looked at what are the longer term things. How do we intervene with social welfare to rehabilitate the kids that have been assaulted, to make sure that the spouses that are tied in these ongoing cycles of violence either sorted out themselves or separate in order to not have this harm ongoing. And there was a lot of ambitious plans that came out of that. There were provincial delegations, 11 different provinces, each sent sort of representatives from each sector that sat down at a table on the last day and said, what are we going to do in East Sepik to make sure that more services are available? What are we going to do in Hela province? What are we going to do in Port Moresby in the National Capital District? How are we going to give these patients the services they need immediately and then make longer-term interventions that start to break those cycles of violence and create a more positive path forward? Again, it's a bit of a glass-half-full, glass-half-empty thing. I mean, if you look at the prevalence of violence, you think, my God, this really is a serious public health disaster, and you start to get depressed. But if you look at the steady, slow improvement, you know, Rome was not built in a day. And you got to take it step by step, stay focused and take baby steps and then build from what you're doing. Already in just the 3 months since the conference, we've seen in a couple different provincial centers an increase in service provision, an increase in attention to the problems, an increase in those coordination mechanisms of the provincial family sexual violence action committees. We've seen now this funding that's come from DFAT for the case management center in Lay, which I think is a very positive step. And if we create those models, demonstrate the value of the models, and then, you know, encourage other people to adapt or adopt the models in their locations, that's going to start making a real difference.
Mm. So is that what you found with the family support centers? That is something that, you know, is now a model that is starting to spread or has grown?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, when we came in, I think it's not an exaggeration to say that there were at most one or two places where reliably a patient could receive those five essential services and protect themselves medically. I think at this point, okay, there's Taree where we're working, there's Port Moresby where we're working, in Moprick. So three places that MSF is insuring. Lay, which we strengthened and stabilized and then handed over, which has continued to provide care. Kundiawa, which, as I said, I think has been sort of consistent throughout. But then there's also Mount Hagen and Vanimo, two which we trained. So you've gone from just one or two regional centers to seven. Now, in a country with 22 provinces that's vast, where a huge percentage of the population is still rural and doesn't have access to these, you know, referral care hospitals, that's nowhere near enough. But it's a start. And every journey of 1,000 miles begins with a start, which is a step, and you move onward from there.
Yeah. So is MSF working in other areas of health provision in PNG, or just mostly focusing on the FSV issue?
So since 2007, the primary focus has been family and sexual violence. If you look historically, we also had some projects during the troubles in Bougainville. A couple times we were supporting the Bouin Health Center in the southern part of Bougainville Island. Mm. We're still there now, but we're actually going to be handing that one over around the middle of the year this year. And that's been a general health care provision, which has provided also for family sexual violence, but not done a lot of active outreach around that. And then up in Taree also, we are... Because there's a general lack of staffing and strength in the hospital there in Taree, we're also running all the emergency medical and surgical services in that hospital. Those, we pick them up also because, of course, they're essential. I mean, you have women and men who get into fights, and since a lot of people in Taree walk around with bush knives and other weapons, you can end up with cases needing significant surgical care. In Lae, we didn't need to do that because it was a relatively strong hospital with surgical services available. I think that we've also got some colleagues from one of the other operating sections, another portion of MSF, that's looking at sort of duplicating this model development that we've done with family sexual violence, doing a similar thing with tuberculosis care, and hopefully launching that somewhere around the middle of this year. And that would make me real proud, because that would mean that MSF is demonstrating a model of response that's scaled and practical to the PNG context, in what I think are two of the most significant public health crises in the country right now.
Mm. Yeah, tuberculosis is definitely something that's had a lot of attention in Australia, particularly the Torres Strait issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's really fascinating to hear. I know that there's a lot of challenges facing the health system in PNG. What do you think are some of the main ones that the government should focus on? The family and sexual violence issue, or are there others as well?
Well, okay, if you want to look at it from a structural perspective, I have got to put a shout out for staffing. The country does not have enough clinicians. It does not have enough nurses. It does not have enough CHWs. It does not have enough doctors. And many that there are now are about to retire. There not enough staff are graduating. A great deal of attention is paid to sort of the dilapidation of the infrastructure or the buildings which are falling apart, and that is a significant issue in most places. A lot of the hospitals that I know have rebuilding plans, but you know what? Buildings don't provide health care, people do. And so there has got to be a step up in training of CHWs, nurses, and doctors, or nothing will improve over time. If you want to look then at where the medical needs are, I mean, we have been saying consistently for years that violence in general, specifically the family and sexual violence, because that affects so many younger children and so many women, and that has such wrap-along effects on maternal child health, on HIV, on you know, children that then grow up to become abusers themselves, if you look at the international statistics on this. So we focus very much on that really public health epidemic of violence. Then you hear a lot of talk about maternal and child health. You hear a fair bit about tuberculosis. You hear questions about HIV/AIDS. We don't have a lot of direct experience in those areas, but from what I've seen in the structures where we're working, none of the healthcare provision is as robust as it really needs to be.
Yeah, so what's coming next for MSF in PNG? You're sort of wrapping up, but what do you think they're going to continue focusing on this area?
Well, okay, so if you look at our model, the development of our services there, we started at the Family Support Center in Leigh, which was fully run by MSF. That means, this means we were hiring all the staff, all the nurses, CHWs, doctors. They were all working under our care, managed by international recruited MSF staff, but mostly local hired, you know, nurses, CHWs. We did the same thing then in Tari. We went to the Family Support Center there. So we feel we've demonstrated that there is this model of care that patients will come and take advantage of, and which they give really good marks to. I mean, we do periodic quality reviews where we say, look, did the service have value to you? Was it what you needed? Did it help protect you? They come back for follow-up sessions, and these are all indicators to us that it's a model that the patient in PNG values and comes back for. Problem is, when we're doing it all ourselves, that's not necessarily a particularly scalable model. You ask yourself, can the system in PNG support this model? So this is what we've been doing now. We're doing it now in Muppet, Port Moresby General Hospital. We've worked in two clinics, Nine Mile Clinic and Laws Road Clinic, in the urban setting of Port Moresby. And we're saying to those hospitals and health centers, you assign a couple nurses to work with us. We'll assign a couple nurses to work with them. We've got clinical trainers and supervisors, so there will be hands-on coaching and development and training. And the idea is that this then provides sort of a bridge support from MSF to that clinical health center that says, we'll train your people, we'll make sure they can do the care, we'll make sure outreach in the community is done so that awareness is there and so that people know to come in for the care. And this is both preventive and curative. You know, it'll prevent further complications later, but it'll also treat the immediate cuts, bruises, you know, any immediate needs that people have. So it should reduce the burden in the long term. Now, it's working pretty well. The uptake and the interest has been strong, but we come back to that human resources problem. When you've got overwhelmed, busy urban health centers with not enough staff, you know, can that manager of that center really take nurses and assign them to this specialized care when you've got lines out the door for just basic coughs, colds, diarrhea, etc.? That's a challenge, and that's why I'm really focusing right now. We as MSF can't have an influence on whether enough nurses and doctors get trained, on whether enough nurses and doctors get assigned to work in health centers, but we can certainly try to call for other people to make sure that that's being done more. And then you're really going to start seeing an improvement.
Yeah. Well, it's been really fascinating to hear about MSF's work in the family and sexual violence space, as well as the other things that you've been doing. What's next for you? Are you continuing
What's next
on?
For me is a long holiday.
A long holiday. It sounds like you deserve it.
So, I'll probably be back in Africa sometime late this year or early next year.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for having a chat with us at the Development Policy Centre.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
You have been listening to a podcast from the Development Policy Centre. For more information on our work, visit our website at devpolicy.anu.edu.au. To join the conversation on Australian aid, Papua New Guinea and the Pacific, and global development policy, visit our blog at devpolicy.org. At the blog, you can also sign up to our newsletter for all the latest updates or connect with us on social media. Thanks for listening.